This is Salman Rushdie.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney.
This is E.O. Wilson.
Hi, this is Dar Williams, and you're listening to the
Humanist Network
Humanist
News.
Network
Humanist
News.
Network News.
Humanist Network News.
I ain't afraid of your Yahweh. I ain't afraid of your Allah. I ain't afraid of your Jesus. I'm afraid of what you do in the name of your God.
It's August 28th, and you're listening to the Humanist Network News, an audio production by the Institute for Humanist Studies. I'm your host, Jess Constantine.
And I'm your host, Duncan Crary. For those of you just joining us for the first time, humanism is a non-religious philosophy based on science, reason, and compassion.
Well, Duncan, it's the end of August, which means it's back to school time.
Yeah, that's one of the things I enjoy about being in the workforce is I don't have to dread going back to school in September.
Now, why on earth would you dread going back to school? I picture you the anticipated having your first day of school outfit planned for a week in advance.
Yeah, right. Well, it's like inertia. You know, once I'm, you know, in summer zone, I don't want to pull the brakes on it, you know? But I imagine you were pretty into back to school.
I was, especially the part where you get to buy new, like, Trapper Keepers and binders and folders and pencils. I loved that. I loved getting my subject organized, you know, stuff like that.
I used to like doing all the preparation, like the color coding.
Yeah.
But once I created the organizational system,
yeah,
I never actually used it.
You know what I never did, though?
What's that?
My summer reading for my English classes. Never once. I'm sorry if any of my English teachers are listening. I never did the reading.
Well, you were just back to school today, actually, right?
That's right. I went to my alma mater. My school is a martyr. Alma, what's the word?
Alma mater. Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute.
That's right. And I was trying to recruit some volunteer interns to help some web work.
Yeah. And you were sporting your humanist t-shirt, right?
I was, even though you told me not to.
I thought it was a little dorky.
Yeah.
But it seemed to work. Well, we're talking about going back to school, and the subject of today's program is the International Humanist Youth Movement, and we have a special one-hour dispatch from Nepal with field reporting from India. It's very exciting. We'll tell you more about that in 1 second, but first, there's a new study out by MTV, which is MTV even around anymore?
I think podcasts have sort of done away with them,
yeah,
in iTunes.
I don't think kids want their MTV anymore, but MTV and the Associated Press just did a study on youth, which they define as ages 13 to 24. So I think you just got bumped out of the category, Jess.
It's very depressing when you read that.
You're no longer young. I just turned 29, so I'm dreading another
you're
benchmark.
You're even less young, Duncan.
Yeah. All right. The study found that 65% of the respondents, American youth, are happy with the way things are going in their lives. And 62% said that they think they're going to be happier in the future. So we've got an optimistic bunch.
That's good to know.
Not the kind of kids I'm dealing with in my neighborhood. okay, but now to race. Non-Hispanic whites, according to the study, are happier than blacks and Hispanics by a wide margin. 72% of whites say that they're happier with life in general compared with just 56% of blacks and 51% of Hispanics. I thought that our listeners would be interested in the section on religion and spirituality. According to this, 44% say that religion and spirituality are either a very important or the single most important thing in their lives, with more than 1 in 10 reporting the latter. So 1 in 10 American youth say that spirituality and religion is the most important thing in their life. 80% of those who say spirituality is the most important thing in life say that they're happier with life in general, compared to 60% of those who say that spirituality is not important in life. The point of this that they're trying to make is that religious kids are happier than non-religious kids. Not sure if I'm buying this or not, but the Pew Research Center found in January that American youth, which they define as 18 to 25,
nice,
is becoming more non-religious. A lot of kids that age are identifying openly as atheist or humanist or whatever. So you know, it's yet to be seen what's going to happen. We're going to hear from a lot of atheist and humanist kids today, and I think they sound pretty happy. Today we're going to present to you a one-hour audio magazine produced by the Society for Humanism in Nepal, or SOCH. This is a group based in Nepal, and they are a member organization of the International Humanist and Ethical Youth Organization.
Also known as IHEO. And IHEO works to give a voice to youth humanism on the international level. They also work to foster cooperation amongst humanist youth.
IHEO is it's the youth arm of the International Humanist and Ethical Union, IHEU, which is the worldwide umbrella organization for humanist groups. The Institute for Humanist Studies is a member of the IHEU.
And also the Institute for Humanist Studies has supported IHEO through the IHS grant fund, which, by the way, folks, our mailman's least favorite day, August 31st, is approaching, where all the grant applications will be coming in, because that is the deadline. August 31st is a deadline for applying for the IHS grant fund, so get your applications in.
That's right. We award $100,000 a year in grants to humanist projects throughout the world. Our emphasis is on youth programs, so break the mailman's back. This report was actually recorded from the 2006 annual conference of IHEO. I think we should let our guest hosts take over from here.
Sounds good.
Hello and namaste. Welcome to the IHEO magazine. This program is prepared for Institute for Humanist Studies, IHS, and IHEO in collaboration with SOCH Nepal. We young humanists from Nepal, me Sarada
and me Uttam,
will be with you till next 1 hour.
This whole program is based on the 5th IHEO conference, its activities, news and different views of the participants and experiences.
Veteran Nepali singer, lyricist and musician Gopal Yunjan composed this melodious music. It reflects the geographical scenario, taste and flavor of Nepali original classical culture.
The 5th Annual Conference of International Humanist and Ethical Youth Organization, IHEO, was held in Vijayawada, India from 28th October to 4th November. The conference was organized by the Atheist Center, Vijayawada, Andhra Pradesh. 33 international youth members from different parts of the globe participated in the conference. The conference was entitled Critical Thinking and Free Inquiry in Education. This report covers the various activities and youth perception and overall multicultural environment during the conference.
It's not only General Assembly but the global yard for young people to involve themselves in multicultural environment. No problem, someone cannot understand the song, sung by the guy from Holland, Mark, but everyone is enjoying his song. Everyone was delighted with Mark's songs. Now it is the turn for host song called Telugu song. Everybody is enjoying. It seems that is humanism. Everybody enjoying with everybody. There is no limitation of border, culture, and no ethnic barriers. It seems they are practicing how to enjoy themselves among the different. Different events from the young friends from different continent with same spirit, excitement, challenges and cheerfulness, but the destination is same. It refers the characteristics of humanism and humanist life stance. They prefer not only humanist activities, but also want to be the humanist activist in their land to fight against different irrational, unethical, inhuman practice, and finally to develop the society in scientific and practical way. An intellectual young from Norway, Christopher looks so fatty among others, but just opposite to his physical shape, his perception is full of creativity and more knowledge about humanism. He describes the declaration of humanism among the participants at daytime and about Norwegian whiskey at night.
It's a Norwegian spirit, and it has been around the world on a boat because the rolling of the ship makes it mature in a special way.
There are different challenges to boost up the humanism, and in and around the world, the humanists are still fighting for it. Most of the countries and societies are financially poor and religiously gripped. That is why basically African and South Asian countries like Nepal and India are facing the problems like violation of human rights, impunity, corruption, lack of good governance, etc. These are the obstacles for humanist activities. More to this, superstitions, religious fundamentalisms, caste systems, Dalit issue are the inherent problem of developing countries. Executive Director of the International Humanist and Ethical Union, Mr. Babu Gogenini, has a very good example.
6 or 7 Dalits being burnt alive, killed by people from other castes. What was their transgression? They skinned a dead cow. Now, note the words, it's a dead cow, and they skinned it. And this was wrong, because a cow is sacred. In this nation, it's animals who are more sacred than human beings. Even a dead animal is more important than a live human being.
How the Dalits were tortured and discarded from the society. Again, Babu.
About 300 years ago, when you walked the streets, you were forced to carry, tie a broom to your back so that when you walk, broom will brush away all your footprints in the sands in the village. You were made to carry a pot in front on your hanging around your neck because your spittle may not fall on the village soil and spoil it. And no Dalit was allowed to walk late in the evening or early in the morning, because your long shadow that is cast by the setting sun might defile other people when your shadow falls.
Not only the caste system, gender discrimination is also the major problem. Active humanist in the Muslim society, Nahid from the northern part of India, shares her example in this way.
Barabanki is Muslim-dominated area and is also famous for smuggling and instructivity and drugs, where Muslim women and girls child as passing their life under pressure of the male dominance.
Next problem is the witchcraft in our society. Many of us have just heard about it, but do you want to hear the real practice of witchcraft in India?
What is witchcraft? Which is popularly known in Andhra Pradesh, Vanamati, Chetabati, Chennai. Harmful anti-social attitude and action by voicing the evil powers with their pact with the devils. They have pact with the devils.
It is because of belief in God. The unseen God has destroyed our mind as well as our creativity.
Belief in God, evil powers, is supernatural power. Evil powers, that is also supernatural powers. And that's why this belief in God is more responsible.
There are huge differences between the humanist activities practiced in West and East. Basically, Western have experienced the civilization for a certain period, but Eastern societies are still ruled by many religious extremists. They are always trying to keep people far from the reality and put in superstition and dogmatism. At least the Westerns have developed educational curriculums based on critical thinking. But Easterners, no chance. In East, all the curriculums are based on religion, so-called customs, mores, etc. More people are unable to fulfill their daily needs because of those factors. Then, how can they think critically? But Westerners are focused on philosophic solution of different problems in humanistic way. Kaya, a delegate from Norway, presents her idea about the relation between philosophy and humanism.
Philosophy and humanism are so hard to define, is that both philosophy and humanism are attitudes and activities more rather than fixed belief systems.
Finally, the IHEO seminar and general assembly was concluded with different masses through trainings and workshops. Many young people came to know the situation of different parts of the world. They shared the idea and it helped to consolidate their knowledge and level of understanding. Young participants were clearer in their vision, goal, and objective. They finally promised to change the society as much as they can and also agreed to exchange the ideas in future. After the conference, all youths returned back to their home with the hope to flourish the idea of humanism in their society.
I think it's really great. I'm getting to meet a lot of people from all over the world, and I haven't been able to travel the world yet, so it's kind of like traveling a lot of places in one spot. But yeah, it's just really exciting meeting everyone.
So, this was an audio piece, very interesting. It makes us to feel that we are still in conference. Lots of fun, music, joke, cultural night, but next to it, another important fact was different aspects of people. People carrying different culture, different views in humanism, debating about the similarities and dissimilarities of their society, exchange of idea for the advancement of their society.
I'm your host, Duncan Crary.
And I'm your host, Jess Constantine. Those are students from Vassar College, which is located between us here in Albany and New York City. And they mentioned they're not afraid of bananas. And that's in reference to Kirk Cameron, who is the host of The Way of the Master. Also, probably most recognized from being Mike Seaver in Growing Pains, mentioned that the banana was the atheist's worst nightmare.
the banana proves that God exists.
Exactly. Duncan, you did something.
I did come into the office slinging bananas. I think they're actually plantains because those are bigger. But Chuck Norris, the Kung Fu actor.
Yeah, and Walker, Texas Ranger.
Yeah, apparently he's like a big hardcore fundamentalist Christian now. And he actually identified the Institute for Humanist Studies as like number one on his threat list.
Nice.
So I have red hair and I'm really Diesel.
He really is, folks.
I'm Jack. So I ripped the sleeves off my denim shirt.
I.e. cut.
And I ripped them. It's a Second Amendment right to bear arms. And I came to work slinging plantains. I posed in a photograph. I looked like Chuck, didn't I?
Scaringly so, Duncan.
Yeah, I was scary. All right, well, let's get back to the international humanist youth movement. In the last segment, we heard some clips from speakers at the conference. In the next segment, we're going to hear some one-on-one interviews with the people who attended the conference.
This is the IHEO magazine. This program is prepared for Institute for Humanist Studies, IHS, and IHEO in collaboration with Soch Nepal. Me, young humanist Sarada.
And me, Uttam, is with you.
We are in the second part of the program. In this section, let's have a short look on the people's experiences.
The host country, India, and its people consider that humanism is the best way to get rid of the superstitions. Mr. Gurinder Singh Azad, active young humanist from Punjab, India, shares his view in this way.
Rationalist Society Punjab is particularly working in Punjab. Yes, there is a lot of scope of humanism in Punjab. Punjabis are known for their open mind and broad heart worldwide. But when it comes to superstitions, I admit our people believe in paranormal activities and witchcraft to some extent, but for the same, we are working and educating people through dramas, plays, literature, and seminars. I see great hopes of humanism in Punjab. I think politics and media is not playing its major role for society in the proportion and way it should. Our people live in villages in more numbers than in cities. Therefore, they are innocent and less educated, and hence unable to understand the conspiracies politicians are playing. This entire system has to be revived, I think.
What are you doing from your organization to minimize or to reduce or to eradicate that kind of problems?
As I told earlier, our organization since 1984, when it came into being, is educating people through theater, seminars, literature, and arranging magic tricks for them so that they may understand how sorcerers, ojhas, or babas exploit them on the name of religion.
What do your organization want from IHEO or other humanist organization, or what kind of support you are seeking for?
See, Uttam, IHEO is an international platform. What requires for all humanist organizations is to come on single platform to raise their voice against the things responsible for inhuman, irrational activities. Therefore, we seek from IHEO and all other organizations to help each other and share their experience to sharpen this movement.
The views and the experiences of the European people is different than Asian people's. They think humanism is a life stance alternative to religion. Mr. Christopher from Norway.
I think it was a good conference. First of all, I think it's important with these conferences that we meet people from other countries and learn a lot about what they are thinking and doing. And also, I think there were some good lectures, some good workshops.
And you are a humanist activist in Norway. How do you think about humanism in Western country and in Eastern country?
My impression is that human rights are much more important, or not important, because they're very important in the West as well. But we deal with different sort of issues in society. So there's much more activism and much more stopping abuses in the East, whereas in the West we are more concerned with perhaps... other issues concerning human rights. That's what I see, that you have much more to struggle with in practical life there. But I think otherwise that it's fairly much the same.
And your organization is providing fund for this kind of program, this kind of international program. What kind of output you seek?
I think it's important that I, as a humanist, have a responsibility for all of mankind. So when we have the possibility to do something good, for instance in India, then we will. And then it's natural for us to find somebody to cooperate who are also humanists. So that's why we are supporting the Atheist Center. I must also say that when we had the field trip, this conference, and I actually saw what they were doing, I was very, very much impressed.
And what about other parts of conference or other issues of conference? You impressed by field visit and I think you have also done project work. And do you think this kind of project work or this kind of conference are really useful for our real life?
I think that some parts of it is. I would almost like to ask you the same question, because I experienced that many of the lectures and much of the material here was from Europe or the United States. So to me this was familiar, and I think sort of I could elaborate on some knowledge that I already had. And but it seems to me it was a bit Western perspective then on these things. So to me it was good. But I don't know how... perhaps it should be a bit more Indian, being in India. Yeah.
So how do you define the role of IHEO to promote humanism in a developing country?
Well, I haven't been thinking much about it, so I don't really know. No, I don't know.
And what about your organization?
It's not sort of my organization's role at all, because we are the Norwegian Humanist Association doing things in Norway.
But you are helping other organizations in other different countries, I think.
Yeah, we do. I mean, we support the international structures. So we support IHEU and IHEO, because we think it's important that we have a development in humanism worldwide. And it's also very good to have friends. So that's what we do. And then we do the aid work here, or we support the Atheist Center's aid work, and that's what we do internationally.
Do you have any comment or suggestion regarding this kind of conferences?
I personally find them very interesting. So this is the fourth conference that I've been to with IHEO, and the value of talking to other people, of learning what happens in other countries, is very high to me. I teach youngsters for some special courses that we have. And so we have in Norway 10,000 14-year-olds each year who have our courses, and I teach some of them. And I will now include one lesson of critical thinking, I think.
The executive director of International Humanist and Ethical Union, Mr. Babu Goganini, shares his view about the conference and humanism.
I think the difference between the Eastern and the Western humanist attitudes is that the Western humanists are mostly concentrating on issues of personal morality, whereas the humanists in the East, especially in the Indian subcontinent, are thinking of issues that concern society by large. Distinction. This very same distinction applies, I think, to the activities of the youth humanists as well.
Are youth really progressing these years to promote humanism? Are you satisfied with it?
Well, of course, one can never be satisfied because one wants more things. But yes, the young people in the world are moving on a direction which can largely be called humanistic. They are definitely not yet part of the organized humanist movement. But if you see the mobilization of young people around issues of globalization, the ecology, the place of the human being and the responsibility of the human being in modern society, you see that they are articulating a humanist vision. Unfortunately, they do not know that their vision is called a humanist vision. So our job should be to reach the message of humanism to these politically, socially aware and active young people.
How IHEU is helping and will help to promote humanist youth activities?
As you know, IHEU used to be a part of IHEU. It was a youth wing. And as executive director of IHEU in London, I had relaunched the IHEU program by inviting interns to work in the office of the IHEU. We had several interns. Vincent Lloyd came to the office. He stayed in London, he came from the US, and he relaunched IHEU as an international body just over 5 years ago. Then he handed over the internship program to Gaya Myers, but she again worked on IHEU activities while based in the IHEU office. So IHEU has been completely in favor of promoting youth humanism, not only because IHEU is interested in promoting youth, but also because IHEU needs new leadership, and that can come only from the younger people.
Why humanist activities are mainly focused only in urban areas, even we know the major problem is in rural areas?
I would say that humanists also work in the rural areas. In many, many rural areas, definitely in India, you have humanists working in villages, working on anti-superstition work, promoting AIDS awareness programs, and even taking part in mass literacy campaigns. So it may seem so because we are meeting in a urban area, but there are projects in rural areas. What we have to do now, however, is to concentrate on issues that affect people in their daily life. That may mean things connected with anti-superstition. That may mean things connected with making democratic local bodies become more effective. The panchayat system, for example, is collapsing, and that needs to be revived. Only young people who are not tainted by the lure of money will be able to put things right in what is a situation which is terrible.
What are you thinking about the conference?
I think this is a great job. When we relaunched IHEU, as I said, 5 years ago, the first IHEU conference received perhaps half the number of people here, both in terms of numbers and in terms of the international representation. Now we have people coming from Finland, from Nepal, from India, from Australia. You have people from Europe and from US. Now, that is, I think, a tremendously important step in the growth of youth humanism internationally. And I think there are many, many competent young people, all of them with great promise for the future of the humanist movement. The question now is how to keep them young and in the humanist movement when they get married or they get a job or they are pursuing a PhD degree, would they continue to give their energy and strength to the organization? If that is done, I think this will be a great thing.
You're listening to the Humanist Network News. I'm your host, Jess Constantine.
And I'm your host, Duncan Crary. We're listening to some field reporting from the International Humanist and Ethical Youth Organization Annual Conference, which was held in Vijayawada, India in 2006. In the next segment, we're going to hear some one-on-one interviews with humanist youth activists from around the world speaking about some of the benefits and challenges of international collaboration. We will turn the show back over to our hosts in Nepal, members of the Society for Humanism Nepal, or SOCH.
There was so young girl from South Korea, Soan. She is newcomer in this philosophy.
I think it was a really great experience at the conference because I got to meet many different people from many different cultures. And also I got to know what I want to be in as a humanist. And I think I've set my goal now, yeah.
What kind of changes do you feel before and after the conferences?
I feel more confident as a humanist because I know what the whole every humanist knows and like the concept of humanism better. And I think I can teach the children that I'm teaching right now better as well, yeah.
What will you do after going to South Korea?
I'm still a high school student, so I'll be finishing my high school. And after I finish my high school, I hope to be a humanist as well as a refugee worker. And yeah, that'd be great.
Being a humanist, how can you define the problem of South Korea?
The problem is that humanism in Korea isn't actually that active. The National Humanist Organization was only formed about 5 years ago, so we're still beginning to work as a humanist. So I hope to be one of the leading people in the humanism.
What is your most priority thing after going to South Korea?
My goal after going to South Korea would be to organize my own organization. And then I'm hoping to unite all the high school humanism organizations into one umbrella. So I'm hoping to do that in 1 year.
Like Son, there were other young and intelligent humanists. One of them is Jyotsana from India. It was her first international conference.
I think the conference was really good because it was like I got the first time this opportunity to be in some international conference. I never attended any international conference before. So for me, it was a very nice opportunity to get aware about this concept of humanism. And it was really good to know the people of different cultures.
Do you think you are changed after conference?
Yeah, because whatever we did here, like we had so many workshops here, and so we learned really nice things. We made some projects for the children, and so that you know we can, while we interact with children, we can use those projects to know more about them and to explain them any issue. Any concerned issue. And also I learned about the different cultures, because for me, in like I'm from India, so whatever is there in India probably it's not there in different countries. So it was really nice to know about the traditions and cultures and other things of the different countries.
What would be your role after going to your university to promote humanism?
Well, I think it's a difficult question to answer because I think you know we can't answer these questions just by saying. You need to do a lot of hard work to give an answer for this question. So maybe I'll explain them about this concept. Maybe I can interact with them and let them know what exactly humanism is and like how the today youths can contribute in the development of the society.
You have done some project work as well.
Yeah.
In this session.
Yeah.
And do you think these project work are really useful for your daily activity?
Yeah, I think so, because we had a project work on media. So in that we developed some activities on how we can teach children to think critically on media. So I am a student social worker, and when in the villages, we have to work with different groups. Like, we work with women, we work with adolescent girls, children, farmers, different groups. So the project which we prepared for children, maybe I can utilize this project in taking different activities with them so that, they can also interact with each other and get aware about the issue.
As a whole, the conference and humanist activities are the learning process for everyone. But Vidyabhushan felt this event was quite different and useful from the eyes of media person.
Look, I have been one of the founder members in this EAU. I have attended the conference in Amsterdam when this formulation was being drafted. And I have worked with a number of legendary humanist people in India, like Justice V.M. Tharkunde, who has been called the father of humanist movement in India. And I worked with Dr. Mulkaraj Anand, who was a humanist and a pioneer of English writing in India. And these things, I imbibed. I saw, having been worked with the Dalits in India, that the religion and religious fundamentalism has exploited people and kept people, Dalits, Adivasis and women, subjugated for years. And it was therefore important for the youths to take a plunge into humanism and see that religious fundamentalism and religiosity do not help.
Yeah.
It actually takes people back.
Yeah. And what kind of problem do you feel in your community or within your community?
You see, because I work in various parts of the country, so I call problem general problems. Because I come from the mountains, so in mountain region, like in Uttaranchal, if I say, it's like Nepal. We are there is a caste system, but not much intelligibility. There is religiosity, but not fundamentalism.
Mm.
The people may go to the temple, they worship nature. All the temples in the mountains are like in the mountains.
Yeah.
Like what do you do in Nepal?
Yeah.
So we have a common, like Uttaranchal or Uttarakhand, what we call, was under Nepal once upon a time.
Yeah.
So we have very close relationships. So whatever you have, like mountain, the women are out there, they follow their traditional practices, but still they are out in the streets, in the market.
Yeah.
And we had seen their women protesting against liquor, women protesting for the rights of the, for the environment,
mm-hmm.
like Chipko movement.
Yeah.
But the youths in other parts of the country face a lot of problems.
Yeah.
One of the problems is through the developmental sector, I would say,
mm-hmm.
they're trying to apoliticize people. Development is not political. But while I say development is political, because if political, being political means asserting about your rights and your identities.
Yeah.
Political for me doesn't mean, you are part of a political party.
Yeah.
It means that you assert, you know your rights. And that's where some of the NGOs, some of the organizations in the last 20 years have failed. Because they want to tell people that, we are not political, we are just, apolitical, and this is NGO and development work are different.
Yeah.
And that has made, created a new space for the religious groups.
Yeah.
So religious groups come in the name of development. They start working on the tribals, in the Dalits, in the other areas. And in our part of the world, hunger, starvation, poverty are the big issues.
Yeah.
So if the religious groups go among the people on the to solve their problems, that obviously the people follow their perceptions. And that is why the right-wing elements in every community in this country is increasing. We have Christian fundamentalists, we have Hindu fundamentalists, we have Islamists. Because they call the secular. But at the same point of time, they disallow any questioning, any dissenting voices within their community.
Mm-hmm.
So that has been a drawback of Indian secularism.
Mm.
It is more cosmetic in nature.
Mm-hmm.
Secularism in this country often is like a sarva dharma sabhabhav. So equal respect to all religion. Now the question is, if I don't have a respect for a religion, where do I go? And if people like Dalits, who have been victim of religious sanctity, divine sanction, caste-based sanction, which has been described in our holy books, so where do they go? Should they say that religion is greater and this thing is not there? Now there are two kind of people in India, and I think elsewhere also. who are trying, some are trying to redefine religion. Like there is a veil issue in Islam, like there is an issue of women's condition. So some people try to say that this is not written in Quran, while others say this is written. So and we have to stick to that. So in that condition, the situation of the victim is really bad. People like Dr. Asghar Ali Engineer, who are a well-known Islamic scholar, he redefined everything. Like he said, this is not there in Iran. It's also like same among the Hindu youth. They try to redefine, like from the, some people try to say that Gandhi embodied Hindu values, so, but he was secular. But it's a flaw.
How do you analyze the option to get rid of this kind of problem?
Yes, I would say that we have been fairly successful. The first thing is that we look our clientele, I would say, our target areas. And fortunately, I've been working with the Dalits. And I call Dalits are the real humanists in this country. Because they've been victim of the religious sanctity. And that's why Dalits have a stronger personality of Ambedkar. So Ambedkar redefined everything. He redefined India's social structure. And Ambedkar is the role model for anyone in who are fighting for the oppressed. If you haven't read Ambedkar and his philosophy, I don't think you can understand India's social system. India's social system cannot be understood in clear terms of the upper caste philosophy. So one thing is that Dalits have found their own icons and own people who redefined, who rejected religion. So every Dalit, every great, you know, intellectual or leader of the subaltern movement in India, whether it was Dr. Ambedkar or Jyotiba Phule or Periyar, M.N. Roy, many of them, M.N. Roy founded Communist Party here, they all talk of the dangers of religion and they all talk of the importance of women to be taken along. So these people are our, you know, role models. Then there are Sufis, Sufi saints like Kabir, Eknath, Tukaram. And we also try to trace our secularism in the text of Lokayat Darshan. You see, Lokayat was founded by Charvak. And it was much before the Vedas came into existence. So there is one thing. Other thing is that we tell people that it's, you should not say blanket, you know, this is bad, that is good. You get good things from everywhere. Even there are good things in Vedas, good things in there. So you, whatever bad is there, you leave that. There are certain things. Most of the tribal communities are nature worshipper, and I don't find any conflict with their worshipping nature. If somebody is doing Surya Namaskar, I think it's thanking. I don't personally feel it's wrong. Many of the humanists may feel that why the people are worshipping the say a river, like in our traditions. People worship river. It's a way of thanking. Like people call Ganga Mata. So why they call Mata is maybe some people try to mystify it. But other is Ganga actually, all land nearing Ganga is a very fertile land. It offers us a lot, you know, in terms of production, agriculture. So it is, if somebody called it a mother, I don't find it's any conflict with the humanist thing.
Yeah, and how can IHEO help or support you to promote your activity?
I would definitely say that, you know, one of the things is that to understand that every country has its own culture. And culture is developed not by religion, but by the local geographical need. It is developed over a period of time. And particularly in subcontinent, in India, in Nepal, in Bangladesh, people, you know, the mountain regions, people have different, you know, perception. So we have to redefine things. Don't impose humanism as a cult of a Western thought. You know, eat, drink and marry is not humanism. If we promote that kind of humanism, then it's going to be dangerous. We have to tell humanism ultimately, you know, try to bring, you know, liberation of bring freedom to the human people. And once one is free from, you know, all superstition, they will enjoy the life. So I think the important part is this, and another thing is that don't treat one particular religion as a dangerous thing. Like there is Islamophobia in Europe. We consider it dangerous. Because if you have to bring ultimately, whether it is humanism or any other thing, we are not made for, you know, ideologies. Ideologies are made for us. So if we have to bring more people to us, like humanism has to enter into developmental sector.
Yeah.
That is my approach.
A practical guy from Norway, Jaws expresses his feelings in this way.
I thought the conference was great, and it showed how you can take humanism in theory and put it into practice, both by keeping it here at the Atheist Center in India, which has a very strong background from doing practical work, and by talking to people and seeing how they apply humanism in their country. And there's a great difference between Europe and India when it comes to how you want to apply humanism. I think that in Europe it's more theory, and I get the feeling that in Asia, after doing this conference, it's much more practical work. You want to apply humanism, you want to do good work, morally and ethically good work with this humanism. And it's very good to know people, which is always a good thing. And I think one thing that really struck me was the way the church argues that, well, Jesus must have lived. And when I used to do these discussions before I came to this conference, I always thought, well, given that we live in a Western society where nobody actually believes in superstition, well, maybe people, well, how could Jesus get away with lying? Maybe people just believed Jesus. And after being here in India and looking at, for instance, the Guru Brothers and their work, I see that fooling thousands of people thinking you can create wine or doing some kind of fancy trick with some fishes and bread really isn't that difficult. You can really fool thousands of people, and you just need to fool 10 in the front row, and then you got 999 people more being fooled automatically, and that is really amazing. So my level of criticism or critical thinking against this church rhetoric has increased, actually.
And this conference was totally multicultural. In this regard, do you think sometime it really becomes hard to walk across multicultural axis?
Yes. The difficulties of working across multicultural barriers are always great, I think. I didn't expect them to be this great, but I think there are many issues that come to the surface. For instance, the idea of shyness as a virtue in the Eastern culture versus being boastful and kind of like making your own headway, the American dream and the Western culture. And I think there's a quite clash there, like modesty versus independence, for instance. And I think this goes on also when it comes to communication. We have quite a bit of non-verbal communication in the Eastern countries that you lack in the Western countries. We say everything with words, so that when some of the dialogue is given non-verbally, maybe the Western delegates will not really understand the total issue, and kind of like simplify it and say, well, the words weren't really that impressive, and maybe they just didn't get it, these Eastern people. You know, they don't have much education and everything, so some things are difficult for them. Mm. On the other hand, I think that many of the Eastern people feel that the Western people are just plain rude. I mean, just going about their own business, telling everybody how things should be, and interrupting everybody, and just, yeah, bolting themselves all the way. And I think that's a difficult issue, and I think that these conferences where people get to know each other are important for breaking down these kind of cross-cultural differences. It's also, I think, important that we practice the methods of cooperation so that you actually have some kind of method for doing the work, not just talking about how you should apply humanism, but sitting down, writing actual papers, producing actual results, and doing this across cultures. I think that the learning process from doing this is great. I think the Eastern youth has a real strength in doing humanism in a practical way. They really know why you need it, they really know how to apply it to their lives. Teaching critical thinking and teaching how to work structured something that I think the Western youth can contribute to the Eastern youth.
A Norwegian girl, Randy, shares her belief of humanism like this.
I kind of admire the humanists in Asia a lot more than I admire the people in Europe, no offense, but it's like you're so strong in your thoughts about how to help people with social reforms. You go out to the field to help them, to talk with them. Your mind is so clear about what you want to do, what is necessary. You're structured about it. And in Europe, it's more like it's an individual thing. So we don't have the same fire. For some people, it's kind of hard to stand up and say, hello, I'm a humanist and an atheist. In Norway, it's kind of like, oh, okay. And it's totally respectable and it's acceptable.
What kind of cooperation do we need to develop humanist activity in Norway and in developing country as well?
Yeah.
From these two sides.
Yeah. I believe that in Norway we kind of need this input from the Asian countries to really know what things are about, because some of the people in Norway or Europe kind of think that if the development countries get money, then it's all solved. And we need the fire again, this fire to really go to the people level to see what's needed. And for Norway, I believe that we have this organization called HAMU, mm-hmm. And we have projects in a few countries, India, Uganda, Nepal. And it's about that the local people, maybe in India, it's like they have these tribes, they need some sanitary system, they need some, the children can learn their parents how to be more accepted in the community, they've been educated, their parents hasn't, and that's, all that stuff is local, so it's not that the Norwegian comes along to help them, mm-hmm. It's kind of like the local has this organization in a place like the Atheist Center in Vishavada. They're out in the field and they know where the money is needed, and they're kind of like helping them to help themselves, not just to be the good European Samaritan comes along with some money. I don't think no one needs that.
These were the views of different young people participating in the conference. The conference helped to share lots of experiences of youth of different country. Uttamji, my colleague, had also participated there. I'm really eager to know about his opinion of this program. Uttamji, how is your experience? How do Nepali people understand humanism? Are they much concerned in compared to European and American people?
Nepal is a developing country. People are gradually being concerned with different issues of humanism. We don't have more organizations that can help to develop humanist activities in Nepal. People know only about human rights. We need conferences, seminars, demonstrations and awareness programs. You know, Nepal had just announced as a secular country. It was Hindu kingdom before. Even you can see some religious extremists are threatening government that they will start demonstration if government is not ready to return the declaration back. So you can easily imagine that is very difficult situation for humanist activists to start their movement. So Saradaji, you can easily imagine that it is very difficult situation for humanist activists to start their movement in Nepal. More to this, our society is blind because of superstitions. At first, we need to emphasize on increasing humanist activists in this land. This is our beginning, we are in minority, so we cannot go to the society with strong voice. Firstly, we should be focused on awareness among the youths, because they are more educated and can understand the society in the scientific way.
That's fine. So Uttamji, sometimes I think that people think that humanism is an antisocial movement. How do you find regarding this issue? How the humanism is going on?
In our context, people think humanism is antisocial movement, which is guided by monothematic way, you know that all. So at first, we should make people to follow the lifestyle in the practical way with ground reality. Then they will accept humanist values and philosophy. So Saradaji, we cannot compare our society with European and American society. At least they have accepted science as a base of human civilization. But in Nepal, you cannot imagine. People think their religion, fatalism, blind rituals are the base of their life. That is the difference. Again, we people from developing country are always seeking for food and shelter. Then how can we think about the humanism at this moment? So again, we should focus most of the primary needs of human being before starting to teach them. I don't think European and Americans are focusing on these primary issues now. So it is the main difference between European or American and our society.
I think that's a very good example, Uttamji. So what about the humanist activist in Nepal?
I see. I have seen some humanist activists in Nepal. They just take this peer movement as a medium of having fun from different international humanist organizations. I feel this type of behavior is hampering this peer movement, as I understand.
Now we are at the end of the program. We have tried to bring up the issues that are raised during the 5th conference of IHEO in India, Vijayawada in 2006. We would like to thank International Humanist Studies Center for providing us an opportunity to produce this magazine. Especially to the board of IHEO, Mr. T. N. Ghimire for his help during the production of this program. Gia Mirza for providing opportunity to produce this program. At last, we'd like to thank all the participants of the IHEO conference.
Thank you very much for giving us the company for 1 hour. We are especially grateful towards you for your support. Me Uttam.
And me Sarada is signing out from the program. Have a great time. See you.
Namaste. Namaste.
You're listening to the Humanist Network News. I'm your host, Duncan Crary.
And I'm your host, Jess Constantine. Well, that was really neat, Duncan, to hear, you know, all the different voices from around the world that make up the international humanist movement. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I feel like I've done some world traveling, although I've really just been sitting here in Albany, New York.
It's the best and cheapest kind of world traveling to do.
Special thanks to our guest hosts for our program today. Members of the Society for Humanism in Nepal, or SOCH. To learn more about that organization, visit sochnepal.org. SOCH is a member of the International Humanist and Ethical Youth Organization. They are also members of the Secular Student Alliance, which is another international humanist youth organization based, headquartered here in Albany, New York, at the Institute for Humanist Studies. To learn more about the Secular Student Alliance, visit secularstudents.org.
And what we just heard was the 2006 conference that IHEO held. They just recently, this past July, hosted their 2007 conference, and that was hosted in Belgium. Mm. And you can read more about that at their website, IHEO.org. That's IHEYO.org.
And you can also hear more from IHEO if you listen to the Humanist Network News podcast number 10, where we had recordings from one of their conferences in Brussels.
They're looking for some interns, aren't they, Duncan?
Oh, yes. IHEO has an annual internship. They offer a month-long internship. It's international. Humanists are invited to apply ages 18 to 30. And if you apply for this internship, you have the opportunity to work for the humanist movement in another country. IHEO offers travel costs, housing expenses, and a modest stipend. There's no news yet about the 2007 internship, but be sure to check back at IHEYO.org for more information.
If you want to join the International Humanist Movement, or if you just want to sort of call in and tell us your thoughts about our show, give our listener call-in, our listener comment line, a call. That number is 206-339-4168. You can also read show notes about our episodes, and you can read transcripts from previous shows at humaniststudies.org/podcast.
Be sure to check out the Institute for Humanist Studies weekly Humanist Network News e-zine at humanistnetworknews.org. Our theme music for the podcast was generously donated, the use of it, that is, by Holly Near. You can learn more about her at hollynear.com.
We're going to round the show out with a song from a student who is a member of the Harvard Humanist Graduate Community. His project is called Robot Goes Here. The name of the song is What All the Screaming's About. You can learn more about it at his website, robotgoeshere.com.
I'm your host, Duncan Crary.
And I'm your host, Jess Constantine.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
And later on I felt all
The Humanist Network News podcast is made possible by the Institute for Humanist Studies, a nonprofit think tank that promotes the philosophy of humanism.